Warning. This story includes materials that are classified your ears only due to disturbing content. Other times we are quite silly and really just a hoot. Unless you are cleared for graphic depictions of sex, violence, or dirty words, this never happened. We were never here. It should go without saying that this is not intended for kids, but we're still saying it for their sake and for yours. We don't always play nice. You've been warned.
Sinister secret agents with shadowy employers and mysterious pasts. A bizarre landscape built from billions of minds. Arachnid-headed beings that guard a war-torn border zone. And all the worst that mankind has to offer, stalking the alleys and crumbling buildings of a place called Blue City. Is it a dream? Is it a nightmare? Or is it just a game? And are you already playing?
Actually, it's Lacuna Part 1, a tabletop role-playing game by Jared Sorensen. In 2010, a group of strangers who had never met in real life answered the call to participate in a text-based game called Lacuna, Slow Burn. None of us had any idea just how massive that story would become, or how much it would overtake our lives, let alone how far we were willing to go to keep that story alive. It's practically unkillable now. We are all very, very scared. Please help. I'm Don Fathom, a professional hypnotist and a writer. I help people think in new and interesting ways. Join me and my friends as we share an impossible story that will haunt your dreams, even as it toys with your sense of reality. Support this and my other projects at patreon.com/Don Fathom. Lacuna Slow Burn starts now. I understand that a few of you are green level agents who have been on semi-active status. You'll find much of this presentation to be review, but I urge you to pay close attention. Everyone in this room, including you, has just received blue level clearance. The man wrings his hands a few times as he peers at the group before him, reflecting each of their faces in his black sunglasses. First and foremost, the hierarchy of security clearances has changed, he says, as he paces out of the way of the large screen behind him. The screen lights up with the first slide. White. Further information pending. Green. Surface thoughts. Short-term memory. Blue. Memory. Classical arena for cognitive temporal displacement and insertion. Deep blue. Subconscious memory. Insertion points limited to directorate only. Black. Hostile environment. Do not attempt entry into black level. Wine. Further information is classified top secret. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the map. A detailed illustration overlaid with various lines and points of data materializes on the screen. It's a large and convoluted cityscape, color-coded by security clearances. In scrutinizing the map, one might come to realize that there appear to be no wine-level areas. Inky black omissions simultaneously paint and censor the black areas. Although the majority of the roads connect, the layout of the city is illogical and at times impossible. Only a few buildings are labeled. Only numerical designations and generic names are used. A few places are at least semi-recognizable. Hotel, cafe, tailor. It's a chore to find them all in the short time before the next slide.
The waiting room. A cramped white stucco waiting room, uniformly lit in dingy fluorescent light that gives everything golden blue sheen at its edges. There are no magazines, books, or pictures on the wall. Only a series of fold-out metal chairs on cheap, nicked linoleum. On the far side of the room is a thick oak door with no discernible hinge or handle. Pre-insertion agents materialize wearing their freshly pressed black mystery agent suits, perfectly groomed and feeling refreshed if a tad formal. The black sunglasses are optional, but advised, and by default, agents appear wearing them. Tucker fidgets anxiously on his cheap metal chair. It wasn't the furniture he minded, it was the waiting. It never got any easier for him. He scopes out the other agents from behind his shades to help pass the time. He didn't really believe you could tell much about a person just from observing them sit, but they were the only interesting things in the room. Agent Chaffer slides the shades onto the bridge of his nose and massages his temples. He regards the other agents in the room with an insect calm. He notices sound more than anything else. The whine of cheap metal chairs sliding against the floor, the shuffling of feet, and a few coughs from the other agents. Passive, quiet, and alert, a thin, dour agent eagerly awaits his first briefing. Agent Coleman is a man much like the other agents here. Dapper black suit, black shades, dark brown skin, and enough attitude to go around. He manifests as the others did, a straight black line, looking about the room. The quiet was disquieting. He solved that problem. What's shaking, y'all? Tucker sighs inwardly. Waiting, in case it somehow escaped your notice. Coleman glances over the lenses of his jet black shades at Tucker for a moment and then smiles. I see. Well, while they're doing the surgery to give you the ability to do more than one thing at a time, talk to him about installing a personality, and maybe having whichever object is stuck up there removed. Okay? You'll enjoy life so much more that way. That being said, he pushes his shades back up on his nose and claps his hands loudly one time, as if that was that. He looks then at Chaffer and sticks out a hand in greeting. Name's Coleman. Good to meet ya. Tucker nods to Agent Chaffer. Tucker.
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 The name Tucker echoes as the room begins to brighten. From behind one's shades, the glare is tolerable as it envelops the entirety of the room. The white of the walls, floor, and ceiling rapidly expands in every direction at once. Somewhere in the distance is a strange hum, and a subtle sound like radio static. Insertion complete.
You have been sent here to locate the hostile personality. His name is Richard Boyer, and he's 28 years old. Caucasian, short brown hair, glasses, athletic build, clean cut, and good hygiene. Subject has aggression and codependency issues. Subject has a criminal record, burglary, and domestic violence. Control is available at any phone line. Simply dial 0. It is best to wait between calls and to refrain from calling twice from the same place.
The agents find themselves in various positions around a double bed hotel room. The choice of wallpaper, autumn colors, and a stylized pattern of lines was popular in the 70s and 80s, making the room feel dated, yet slightly familiar to those over 30. The carpet is thick orange, and the sheets are slightly dingy, though everything else here is clean and well kept. A picture of wild horses charging through a valley, and that of a flower in a blue porcelain vase help add to the generic feeling of the place. Agent Tucker looks around, assessing the new surroundings. He turns back to his team. So, we know the target's name and age. Anyone know anything else? Yeah, Coleman says with a chuckle. Someone around here could use a queer eye like a muh. He pauses and pulls his shades. Antiquated 70s decor. Then he turns and glances at the painting. That painting. Someone else says, before we proceed, my name is Agent Chaffer. I look forward to working with the two of you. Lighting a cigarette, Chaffer says, Richard Voyer, 28 years old, Caucasian, short brown hair, glasses, athletic build, clean cut, and good hygiene. Tucker nods, likewise, Agent Chaffer. Add to the description a criminal record for burglary and domestic violence. Coleman says, criminal, burglary, not robbery. That bespeaks a person not fully comfortable with his own abilities to earn. Not an alpha male type, I'm thinking. Codependent of some sort. Combine that with domestic violence and addiction seems likely. As well as aggression issues, of course. A yellow cream-colored telephone sits atop the nightstand between the two beds. Nobody had noticed it until it started ringing. Was it even here before? As the phone begins to ring, Coleman walks over and looks perplexed at it. He looks directly at Tucker. Do you remember this phone here before now? Coleman shakes his head, reaches out and places a hand on the receiver, but doesn't pick up. I don't think it was here. He waits for something, perhaps the acknowledgement of one of his fellow agents that he should pick it up. Tucker raises an eyebrow toward Chaffer. He approaches the phone and answers it.
Hello. Tucker here.
This is Control. Insertion looks a little rough from this end. Is everyone all right over there?
Tucker looks confused for a second. No problems on this end, Control. I'm fine. The others seem to be too. I'm sure you'd rather hear it firsthand. Coleman says, everything's fine. Control, we're in and starting the investigation now. Chaffer says, all is well, Control. We're getting our bearings and beginning our investigation. Chaffer peers at the phone and then around the room once again.
There isn't much time before this window of communication closes. We wouldn't want any static on the line. Please verify that everyone has an intact lacuna device before risking contact with the target. Dialing zero on any phone in Blue City will allow you to contact us should you need any further information, requisitions, or emergency ejection. Please relocate outside of the building, designated hotel, before attempting any further contact with us to prevent interference. Whatever you do, don't...
The line is dead. Tucker puts the phone back on the hook. I guess that's that. Before we proceed, Agent Coleman, I ask you again. Do you know anything else about our target? While waiting an answer, Tucker examines himself for a device. Chaffer rifles through his pockets and produces a cold, metallic lacuna device. He puts it back in his pocket. All mystery agents can confirm they are in possession of a small, smooth, glossy black button decorated with a single white question mark. It's typically located in one's pocket or attached to the left side of one's jacket lapel. There's a small bathroom off to the side with the door currently open. The exit door to the hallway is a muddy brown door, festooned with a worn brass handle. I'm sorry. Coleman seems to be pulling his mind back on track. Voyeur, 28 years of age, recent history suggests aggression issues, as well as some prominent codependency issues. It's also this agent's opinion that her HP is probably an addict of some sort, and may well be looking for a fix or a hit of something. He should be considered highly dangerous. He opens his jacket and sees the lacuna device attached to his shirt there. He's looking at it intently. Tucker looks briefly concerned. Is there a problem, Agent Coleman? Coleman walks into the bathroom, glances at himself in the mirror, and looks around for anything unusual. No, I mean, my badge is how... I'm not sure what it does. I'm not sure what it does either, says Chaffer. I presume that it is somehow instrumental in apprehending our HP. It may also provide us with egress to certain off-limits areas of the simulacrum of the city.
Agents have just been reminded that the little button with a question mark is indeed called a lacuna device. Although it looks and feels much like a typical metal button, there is no actual pin. It seems to hang on like a refrigerator magnet. Agents recall the standard operating instructions. Upon apprehension of the target, a team member must text omitted, twist the button clockwise, count to three, and make a wish. If all instructions are followed correctly, the entity will instantly be transported to the lacuna.
Chaffer sticks another cigarette between his lips and lights it with a lapis-colored lighter. A thin plume of smoke weaves a trellis above his head as he follows the other agent through the door. He suddenly remembers the purpose of the strange device and says, "It is definitely used to apprehend our HP." Tucker says, "We have our instructions, mostly. The next chance we get, we should ask Control what the missing step is, but you know the drill. Twist clockwise, count to three, make a wish. It will transport the subject to the lacuna. I think technically we have to make the apprehension, then use the device. But it's all the same concept. If it does anything else, I consider it a bonus." He opens the door out. "Shall we, gentlemen?" "By all means," says Chaffer, an emaciated smile stretched across his lips. And with that, Tucker leads the team from the room. Coleman falls in line, giving a glance back into the room before following his fellow agents out. Blue City is beautiful in the way noir films and dusty cathedrals are beautiful. Even the most colorful things are drab and pasty, the sky above a pale blue, dotted with wispy, indistinct clouds. Passers-by are dressed formally in styles decades behind the times. Even the cutting edge of fashion here comprises old suits and dresses that haven't been seen around since 1985. The city seems relatively empty and conspicuously lacking in advertisements, with maybe a dozen people in sight, most of whom travel on foot. A few cars drift lazily by, mostly old sedans in brown, ivory, and white. Out of the corner of one's eye, what might be a Model T in passing as it makes its way down a side street. Agent Tucker looks around and then pauses for a moment to think. Any ideas? I'm inclined to look for a payphone. Chafford takes in the panoramic view of stagnant decay and feels a tinge of sadness and nostalgia. He feels as though he's just stepped into a world that exists solely within the boundaries of dusty black-white photograph. Where would a young, fastidiously clean man frequent in a place like this? Perhaps a gym or a bathhouse, he thinks. A payphone looks to be available. It's a few blocks to the left, facing away from the motel entrance, the old kind inside a large wooden enclosure. The candy shop can be seen just beyond the payphone. It appears the cafe is on just the other side of this block, with its familiar slat roof, large glass windows, and the smell of... Tucker furrows his brow in thought and then frowns. The good news is we have a payphone right here. We can get what we need, at least in theory. But we also cannot use this location again. The bad news is we have nothing more than a name, physical description, and psychological profile. No solid leads. He checks the phone booth for a phone book. I propose we check the police station or repository of public records and see if he has an address on file. With an address, we could show up at his door, and if he's not there, we could try to find some clues to where he's gone next. He begins to pace back and forth, hands folded behind his back. All that said, there's a phone here. Is there anything we need immediately? Chaffer says, your idea is a sound one, Agent Tucker. Perhaps we should visit the office or records. It might also be prudent of us to visit one of the shops, see if we generate any leads by speaking to some people. In terms of control, we might inquire if they can provide this perp's spending history. Good ideas, all of them, Tucker remarks, pulling out a cigarette of his own. You must remember the map better than me. Record sounds like just the place we need to be. You know the way? Coleman remains quiet as he's casing the area, glancing up and down the blocks, being mindful of what's around. Our HP is probably pissed off. I would suggest maybe seeing about weapons. Just a thought. I thought along the same lines, says Chaffer. There's more than just HPs to contend with. The passers-by weren't disinterested in the agents before, merely courteous. Even the most casual exchange of glances was followed by a wave, smile, at least a curt nod of the head. Strange, then, that even as agents Coleman and Chaffer turn to exchange words, the people turn away. Those sharing the sidewalk with any of the mystery agents either change direction or cross the street. Cars turn off at the nearest side street instead of cruising by the group. What had been formality had turned into outright avoidance. Should we then address the logistics first? Chaffer eyeballs the phone and says, why don't we order up some sidearms as well as some additional information on our HP? Tucker nods. That reminds me, what all are you good for? I specialize in access and investigation, so I may be well suited to making the call. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of one of you being better. Investigation is my strong suit as well, Agent Tucker, but you seem to be a bit more gregarious than I am, so I would not be averse to you taking the helm and corresponding with control. Chaffer lights another cigarette. Tucker nods, throws down his cigarette, and crushes it out. He steps inside the phone booth, picks up the receiver, and dials zero, waiting for control. Control, this is Tucker. We anticipate a need for guns. Can you help me out here? Seeing that Tucker has apparently been unable to reach control, Chaffer approaches and says, I'll gladly give it a try, too. Tucker smiles grimly and hands the phone over. Chaffer presses zero and says, Control, this is Agent Chaffer. We'd like to requisition sidearms. Please provide at your earliest convenience. In addition, please forward a bank statement documenting our HP spending habits, if possible. There is indistinct talking in the background. He waits a few moments and then hangs up the phone, nonplussed. He turns to Agent Tucker and, shrugging his thin shoulders, says, Guess we're on our own for the time being, unless anyone else would like to give it the old college try. Tucker half-heartedly makes a fist and strikes the wall of the booth with the bottom of it. Either way, I suggest our next stop be Records. Chaffer puts his cigarette out on the side of the booth. Records it is. Coleman looks between his fellow agents, shakes his head, and laughs. Are you telling me that we can't even call control? Chuckling, he falls in behind the rest of the team. Tucker sticks his hands in his pockets and locks. You can only play the hand you're dealt. We'll try the next one. From across the street, two people wave, both in their mid-30s, well-dressed even for a place such as this, as if they're on their way to a fancy dinner or an expensive show. Their skin is bronze, their complexion's clear. Hardy and Hale, people of Spanish descent, possibly Castilian or Basque. They laugh delightedly to themselves as they urge the agents over.
The woman poses in a slim black dress that heavily accentuates her curvy figure, topped with a blue velvet tea hat. Her face is round, but not unpleasant, a thin stripe of amaranth lipstick that gives her smile a sharp edge. There isn't a speck on her or a fold out of place. The man stands at her side, wide-shouldered and athletic, his face thickly mustachioed, wearing a perfectly tailored, immaculately lavish black suit with orange pinstripes. A white rose dangles ornately from his breast pocket. Nobody else gives the slightest glance to the agents, avoiding them like lepers. Tucker hurries across the street when there's a break in the traffic, glancing back to see if the others are following. He resists the urge to go for another cig and approaches the couple. Can we help you? Chaffer follows suit. Unlike Tucker, he casually lights a cigarette that is clenched between his lips. Drawing up beside the strangers, he elegantly pulls the cigarette from his mouth and plows a plume of smoke upwards. Since Tucker has already broken the ice, he waits and listens to what they have to say. The man takes a half step forward to address the approaching agents. Salutations, he says warmly. I hope we're not disturbing you. It's just, well, my wife and I had heard of visitors here in Blue City. Until now, we've never actually seen any. The woman comes up behind her husband and drapes herself on his right arm, leaning on his thick shoulder for support. She eyes the men, curious and beguiling, before chiming in. It's true, there were such strange rumors. You certainly look real to me, sirs. The man nods agreeably. Quite real. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Javier Domingo. This lovely creature beside me is my wife, Cassandra. He proffers a handshake to each man in turn. Coleman takes the offered hand and shakes it firmly but doesn't comment. Not even his own name. Tucker shakes hands with Javier.
A pleasure to meet you, Mr. Domingo. I'm Agent Tucker. We're actually here to look for somebody. Do you think you could help us out by answering a few questions? Before Javier can answer, his wife pipes up. We'd love to, she says, thrilled at the attention. The man nods that same nod, what is becoming a familiar gesture of compliance and agreement whenever his wife speaks. Chaffer smoking inspires Javier to produce a thin cigarette from a gold case within his breast pocket, resting one between his lips before offering the same to Tucker and Colton. So, what would you like to know? He asks, with a smooth gray exhalation. Colton shakes his head, refusing the offered cigarette, and while the other agents speak to the couple, he seeks out anyone else on the street seeming out of place, not paying too much attention to them, or trying to seem too inconspicuous so as to seem aimless. Tucker takes a cigarette, smiling at his own foresight. Thank you, sir. As I said, we're looking for someone. Do you know a Richard Voyer? Now Javier's head shakes. No, I'm afraid not. We don't know any Voyers, do we? A quick check with his wife. She seems disappointed as she indicates she does not. And what lineage are they? Old money or new? Or, Javier snickers, no money at all. His lineage is unknown to us, says Chaffer. I presume that Mr. Voyer is a man of modest means, probably does not travel in the same circles as you. Plume of smoke billows from his lips. He flicks his cigarette to the street and grounds it into the ground with his shoe. Let me assure you, sirs, that I rarely travel out of my circles, Javier says. Why are you looking for this man, Voyer? Those types prefer the bar, suggests Cassandra. Or maybe he's at the park. They let anyone into the park. Tucker nearly arches a brow at Chaffer. Why are we looking for him? Chaffer says, we work for the Census Bureau, and Mr. Voyer has not provided answers to the questions the Bureau solicited in the form of a questionnaire. We're merely attempting to contact him in order to obtain that information. Cohen looks at Chaffer and then sidelong at the two natives, almost skeptical that they would buy that story, but he remains quiet. Lines on Javier's face tighten and stretch into a look of puzzlement. I know nothing of this bureau of which you speak. Is there a three-letter acronym for it? Regardless, I know how you people are about your questions. Is this man suspected of a crime? Asks Cassandra, worry creeping into her tone. Her voice pinches into a whisper.
I mean, surely, this isn't part of the conflict. Javier clears his throat. Certainly not, my dear. These men work for some kind of census, no?
Tucker smiles at Cassandra. We're not part of any conflict if we can help it, but we're just doing our jobs. In an ideal world, we'd never even hear about a conflict. Then again, in an ideal world, people would send in their forms and we'd be out of a job. He makes a point of trying to sound sincere. In for a penny, in for a pound.
Surely we would not accuse you of... Javier clears his throat, looking about uncomfortably. This man you seek, what does he look like? What of his age, his fashion? Why would you think he has crossed our path? Again, I must ask if we have anything to worry about, asks Cassandra. The man is more reserved as he speaks now. Please excuse my wife, gentlemen. You'll fill her head with all sorts of wild ideas. Cassandra scowls. She snakes a hand down behind the small of her husband's back. He winces before laughing heartily and embracing her more tightly. Even as they huddle close, she looks concerned, peering at the agents from over Javier's shoulder. Coleman looks at the two locals and then finally speaks. We're not certain exactly. Unlike other departments and agencies, we don't work from the presence of facts, but from the lack of facts. All we do know is that it's a male, that he was here or near here quite recently, and that he's evading us to the best of his ability. Currently, we are mostly interested in persons who are out of place in the area. New faces, nervous and paranoid. These are good places to start in our line of work, you see? The man listens intently as Coleman uses more straightforward terms. His eyes glitter with understanding. I'd have expected the same of visitors here. Information does not come easily. There are things that even we find too prohibitively expensive to know, he says, ruefully. Sadly, only you seem out of place. You seem to be describing yourself, at least physically. I hardly see anyone new these days, really. The neighbor hired a new gardener, Cassandra says, perking up. And there's a new bag boy at the grocery. Nobody's done anything suspicious, though, really, she trails off. Just cutting hedges, ringing me up, that sort of thing. Coleman nods and actually cracks a smile. Well, these new people, the gardener and the bag person, how old would you say they were? Do either of them strike you as social? A girlfriend, maybe? Any distinguishing marks or features? Maybe a bandage or a scratch or something? He then nods again, as if understanding the consternation in their looks at the last question. Well, we found a place where the subject might have been hiding, and we found that a drinking glass had been broken. Think on a long shot that maybe he cut himself, and that might help us narrow the possibilities a bit. I have a very abstract way of thinking. And then his calm, quiet chuckle.
Agent Tucker decides the best course of action is to stand there, smoking, smiling like an asshole. The questioning jumped the tracks somewhere along the way, and he'd definitely talk to his teammates about it later. But for now, solidarity in the face of adversity, or utter confusion, was the order of the day. Chaffer, nonplussed, smokes quietly and listens to the exchange. We need to take a step back and re-examine what we already know, he says to himself.
The man shakes his head. I never pay attention to... Cassandra comes forward. The young man at the grocery store is still in school. He has blue eyes and light blonde hair. Handsome, but very shy. I saw the gardener yesterday wearing a straw hat as he bent over some gardenias. He looked kind of short, couldn't be older than 30.
Coleman smiles again and nods. And you're not aware of any of their romantic affiliations? Well, you've been extremely helpful. Unless my colleagues here have any more questions, we'll leave you to be on your way.
The phone in front of the candy store is ringing.
Tucker nods. Yes, thank you. You've both been very helpful. He quickly makes his way over to the ringing phone and answers it.
Javier fishes out a silver pocket watch, densely etched in mathematical symbols. Just as well, he says. Any longer and we'd be late to the kinetoscope. We're watching the animal executions, says Cassandra, excitedly. A pleasure, gentlemen, says Javier. With a wave, the couple begin ambling down the street, laughing as they go. The other people continue to completely ignore the agents. Some simply make a wide circle, while others make a point to cross to the other side of the street.
Caseworker had to leave due to an emergency, and I've taken over. You're in good hands. A few things. There's a lot of cross-chatter between you and the subject. We're also noticing a marked increase in static. Are you experiencing any signs of escalation? Any sign of the hostile personality?
Tucker cradles the phone with his shoulder and leans forward against the booth's wall, cigarette still hanging out of the corner of his mouth. We're getting some marked avoidance. That's about it. What else can you tell us?
The volume is lower now. Pops and hisses on the line make some of Control's words illegible.
You were all fully briefed before insertion. Telling you something you already know about the subject might cause feedback. Specific questions at your own risk. You sound lost, Agent. Strange events, meetings with specific personalities and the like are referred to as escalations. Seeing more escalations means you're on the right track. Creating further escalations may assist you in your mission, but do so at your own risk. Things can get out of hand fast down there. Whatever you do, don't let anyone or anything keep you stuck for too long. If you're not getting anywhere, keep moving. Try to change things up. Exploring, asking questions, and gaining new information about Blue City will help. Like I said, at your own risk.
Tucker motions for the other agents to draw near and puts a hand over the receiver. It's you-know-who. Any questions? He turns back to Control. We met with individualized personalities who spoke of a conflict. You know anything about it, especially if it might endanger the mission or ourselves? Modulating high-pitched tone fills Agent Tucker's ears, no longer coming from the receiver, but from everywhere. The other agents seem to be going about their business as if nothing is happening, even as the sound increases until it's a deafening roar. And suddenly it's gone. The voice on the other end of the phone is talking again, but Tucker is too dazed to listen. A few moments later, he returns to his senses. Memories flood Agent Tucker's mind.
The conflict, as it is called by personalities within Blue City, is some kind of ongoing war. Much like our own experiences with terrorism and the text omitted, this conflict does not manifest as full-scale war. It plays out like a chess game. Unfortunately, we're not sure what the pieces do or how to play in any meaningful capacity. The people within Blue City represent one side of the conflict. Only secondhand and eyewitness accounts of the adversary are available. Of these, all uniformly describe the enemy's agents as embedded spies. Although no agent has seen it firsthand, enemy agents have perpetrated a series of bombings on Blue City. All known bombing sites are specially marked on the map. They only show up every few months or so, but they're consistent between subjects. It's of great concern to the Directorate that once a site is bombed, it stays that way. After all, there are no construction crews or even bricklayers in Blue City. We're not sure what part the Spider-Men play in this. Citizens avoid talking about the Spider-Men. When pressed, they will only say good things about them. Omega believes that they are some kind of secret police, which would make them active agents of Blue City in the conflict. Regardless of these speculations, we understand little of their actual operations or motives. Let me remind you again, agents. Calling the Spider-Men by name, talking about them in any way, or even describing them will draw their attention. Quickly. Once they're on you, there's no shaking them. Either you dispatch of the HP, or you eject before you end up dead on the slab. Agents recall most of the briefing regarding the conflict, except for text omitted. They understand that there have been bombings throughout the city and that any personality could be an agent of the adversary, though their motivations and methods remain unclear. Agents who wish to visit a bombing site must request access directly from Control.
Tucker's head throbs with the addition of new information. Despite that, he manages to retain his composure and stay on the line, looking to the other agents to see if they want anything with Control. Perhaps we could requisition our HP spending history, says Chaffer, grimacing as he watches the expression on Tucker's face.
Hold, please.
Soft elevator music flows from the earpiece, a jazzy rendition of White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane. Control clears his throat.
Sorry about the wait. Hottest lead I've got is increased activity in the heights. Hot spots like this tend to light up when the HP is actively working in the area. Unless it's the Heights is a series of mansions housed within Blue City. I'm sorry, I can't give you precise directions, except to say that you take a right from the front door of the candy shop and keep walking. Perhaps a fellow agent can assist with navigation. Hey, wait a minute. Is this your second call on the line? Oh, shit. Why didn't I catch that? Line is compromised. Repeat, this line is compromised.
The call disconnects abruptly. Tucker slams the phone down on the hook. The Heights. Right from the candy shop, shit may be about to go down. Someone else take point for now. Coleman says, you want one of us to take lead or trying to get somewhere that only you know is... He shrugs and heads down the street past the candy shop. Tucker follows closely. Can't be the guy doing everything unless you want me dying on the slab before we even find the subject. Besides, all I know is that it's right from the candy store front door, controlled with its usual cryptic self. I'm happy to oblige, says Chaffer, walking towards the front as expeditiously as possible. Agent Tucker can't help but put a little swing in his step. If he relaxes too much, it'll feel like he'll float right off the ground. The agents take a right from the front entrance of the candy store. They pass three blocks of forgettable, nondescript buildings. When the agents cross the street, all the cars automatically stop for them even as the occupants stare ahead blankly. As they walk along, the agents notice a building on the left side of the street with dark windows and thick wooden doors. Voices and music can be heard from within. This appears to be the bar. Trees loom ahead, uniform rows of trees. With scrutiny, the agents can see a large wall obscuring an exclusive and private neighborhood. A few high rooftops peek over the canopy, betraying the large, lavish homes beyond. The Heights is only four blocks ahead. All I've got is that the Heights has increased activity, and staying where we were was bad. If you think the bar could yield some clues, let's stop, but if not, let's not. If this is how everyone felt with their hearts rate up, Coleman should be thanking him for the opportunity to take the lead. Coleman looks at the bar, and then at Tucker, and grows a wicked smile. You know, I think we might find some good in there. Closed quarters. If the bar is packed, we might force a few people to talk to us. That's a good thing, right? Come on. Let's go talk to some folks. With that, he strolls on into the bar. Chaffer smiles slyly and, shrugging his shoulders, follows Coleman into the bar. Tucker sighs.
Greetings, junior agents. I made the decision to present most of this as originally written, with some light editing for clarity. Anything that doesn't translate directly from the original, I do my best to evoke through experience. Though we wrote it over many years, much of this story was improvised in short bursts, usually when I was supposed to be working. I regret nothing. I'm self-employed, and I still slack when my boss isn't paying attention. This is our passion project. So much of this game, and even those short bursts of improvisation, came out of a world that's taken on a life of its own. I can't get it out of my head. It grows stronger each and every time I interact with it. It's only a matter of time before it takes over completely. And it's probably too late for you now, too. I want to thank all of my agents for doing their part, and a special thanks to agents like Matt Kimmel, aka Agent Tucker, who did a lot of the reading for this episode. It's my sincere hope that I can voluntarily recruit and definitely never coerce, kidnap, or brainwash more agents to read in future episodes. And of course, thank you listeners for all your listening. It has been reported to the authorities. Before they get you, you can support this and other projects on Patreon. Join us and expand our influence over the unsuspecting masses. You'll get access to all my classified materials and a bunch of stuff I made up. Because let's be honest, it's all the same thing, really. Discover things the public just isn't ready to accept. Experience the thrill of fictionally endangering yourself on a daily basis. Enjoy a constant state of paranoia
with none of the calories. Get bonuses, exclusive materials, early releases, live broadcasts, and more at patreon.com/DonFathom. That's DonFathom. We're on social stuff too. Check it all out. We're Midnight Police on YouTube, TikTok, X, and Facebook. On Instagram, we are The Midnight Police. That is The Midnight Police. Get it right. You've been warned. This week's episode was written by myself, Matt Kimmel, and entities working under the pseudonyms Agent Chaffer and Agent Coleman. This episode was read by Don Fathom and Matt Kimmel. Production, editing, pretty much everything else was by me, Don Fathom.
All content from Lacuna Part 1, Second Attempt, is copyrighted by Memento Mori Theatrics, all rights reserved and whatnot. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivative 4.0 license. Quick review, agents. That means you can copy and distribute Lacuna Slow Burn as long as you give us appropriate credit and you do not change it or use it for commercial purposes. If you do, we'll sick the Spider-Man on you. Or something even worse. Lawyers.
That concludes this episode, Junior Agents. But you'll be back in Blue City in no time. Sooner than you think.